The Positive Mind coming up. And once again, a big thank you to those listeners who have donated so generously during our most recent fund drive. You are the reason why we call this listener-sponsored media, and we thank you for that. It is now 3 p.m. Stay tuned for The Positive Mind here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org online.
Buddy, welcome back to The Positive Mind. I'm Kev O'Donoghue here with Ben Starr in the studio and Nasima Diane Deemer.
Hey, everybody. Hey, how
Ben.
Are you?
Say hi, Ben.
Hey, good to be back.
Good to be back. Bringing you some ideas, concepts, and guests. Try and help you lead a more positively minded life. It is hot out today.
Ooh.
You remember that
it's
Spike Lee,
in the city.
The Spike Lee movie where it says, temperature for the day, hot.
Oh, maybe we should play Hot Town Summer in the City.
Well, that's a cliche.
It is, but that's what
it is. It's very hot. Does the heat affect you? Do you know, like, that you can be immediately impacted by the heat? I know 3 o'clock this morning, it was 87 degrees in New York City.
That's absurd.
It's scary.
Crazy hot.
Isn't it scary?
Thank God for AC.
Thank God for AC, for sure. But it makes you wonder, right? It makes how receptive are you and affected are you by your environment, by a change in temperature? You know, just by the Fahrenheit being a little higher than expected, the humidity level higher than expected, the shower a little colder than expected.
Right.
Right. Imagine if you're taking a shower and your shower gets all of a sudden cold.
Oh, yeah.
What does that do to you?
That happens to me when the downstairs neighbor flushes the toilet.
New York living at its best.
It's a big problem here in the Big Apple. So we want to pay attention a little bit to these things today because it's the end of summer. It is the last Wednesday in summer. And we want to go out with audience participation, all the glories and great things of the summer, and even the bad stuff if you have to.
Yeah,
but we want to reach out to people today and talk about the experiences of your senses.
And how your senses can help you lead a more positively minded life.
Can it?
Yes.
What if you have, like, we had a caller a long time ago. Remember, Ben, this gentleman, he was a lovely guy. He's in his 90s, and he says he can't taste food anymore.
I do remember that.
You know,
it
and he's
happens.
Like, why
That's
should
so
I, you know, why should I even
intense.
Eat? Would you eat if you didn't taste your food?
Well, think about it. The older folks, okay, we're going to go into a lot more detail about smell and scent, and a lot of older people lose their sense of smell as they're losing different capacities in their mind. If they're losing their memory, smell, the first smell, as opposed to other senses, goes through the memory and emotional channels before it hits the thalamus, which
is
where it's filed
taste,
away.
This gentleman's tongue.
Well, smell is connected to taste.
Tell me how.
You taste what you smell, basically. They're very linked. And if you lose your sense of smell, which a lot of older folks do, you will lose the capacity of taste. Also, your taste buds die off through your life.
Right.
So if you lose smell, you're even more handicapped.
I'd love to ask the gentleman if he's in the audience today, please call us when we take calls today. We'd love to know how you're going, how it's going, and how you're finding some enjoyment in your other senses.
Right.
Do you have a favorite sense?
And can you smell? Like, how is your sense of smell?
And how is your sense of smell? So I'm asking the audience in general, do you have a favorite sense? I know that's an odd question. Like,
yeah,
would you
or
prefer
a dominant one?
Yeah, well, the dominant is another thing.
Mm-hmm.
But do you get more pleasure from your sight or from your ear or from your tongue?
Or your
or
nose.
Or from your touch or from your nose. So that's an odd question. Right. There is a dominant. We all probably have some dominant one. And I know that blind people, when a person loses their hearing or they lose their sight, that the other senses get mm-hmm. upped. They up the ante.
Look how many right. Tremendous musicians are blind.
Right.
Mm. Right. I think that sound, that oral, A-U, oral.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Sense has been heightened and refined because they were forced to.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think the senses are magical. Imagine if we judged success in life based on how well your senses are tuned. How much do you receive and feel through your senses every day? Are you a person who's turned off their senses? We live in a very hectic city. And so there's reason that we have to cut out stimuli. Ben, you live in a pretty congested area.
Yeah.
What are the sounds that you hear that you have to tune out?
Well, recently, when I first moved there, it was different sounds. Now it's construction constantly. Mm-hmm. Even now outside of hours where they're supposed to be working. You know, there's all kinds of construction happening, even illegally. At a few weeks ago, Sunday night, 2 a.m. or Monday morning, 2 in the morning, some guy with a jackhammer.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I mean, they're like really under the gun, and they're at all hours. It's terrible.
And they're also obviously very...
And is that illegal? I mean yeah, obviously you're not allowed to make noise before 7 a.m.
Right, after 6 p.m., and that's on weekdays. And technically weekends, not at all. And I know that because I've looked into it.
Rules.
Because they've been breaking the rules and no one gets held accountable because real estate runs the city.
Let's play a little New York sound for people who don't live near a construction site.
Or just city in general.
Or just any
city. City sounds.
That's what we endure. I mean, you know, if you're in Kansas or other parts of this great country, you're not necessarily hearing it that intensely. And New York has other sounds like a subway.
Sure.
Yeah. There's a little subway sound.
Helicopters overhead.
Helicopters.
It's sensory overload living in the city.
It's
but not just the sounds. I mean,
Absolutely.
Think about the smells, the sights. It's a crazy place. When we have something called light pollution. Think about that.
Yeah.
That's pretty wild.
Yeah. What is that? What do you mean?
There's so much light constantly in this city.
Hmm.
Right? From all of the street lights, from all the tall buildings, from all the lights that are around.
Times Square.
Yeah, you can't see the stars. And Times Square in the scene is a great example.
Oh, sure.
You go to Times Square
it's daytime,
at
all
11
day
o'clock
long,
at night, 1 in the morning, it looks like daytime.
Yeah. So we want to talk about senses today and highlight the senses because, yes, it's the last Wednesday in August. And if you can't be alive with your senses at this time of year right now, you know, like in wintertime, we all contract a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Wood contracts in the cold and it expands in the warmth. Well, humans kind of contract in the cold and they expand in the warmth. And this has got to be the hottest day of the year.
Yeah.
So,
we picked a good day for the show.
Maybe, yeah, but maybe not. But, I mean, yes, August is a good time to talk about senses in general, I think. But maybe today's a little too hot. But what's your favorite sense? It makes a lot of sense to turn off your sensuality, your sense mechanisms. It makes sense to turn off your ears when you walk out. I wonder if you... If we have all learned subconsciously to turn off our ears when we walk out in the street.
Yeah, absolutely.
To
be able to manage. Yeah, and pick out sounds that you need to pick out. But you would be your brain, your mind does filter out a lot of background sound. And it's very hard for people who have PTSD or autistic or have problem with hearing. The outside world can be incredible.
Yeah.
Very hard to filter out the background noise.
Mm-hmm.
so that they can think straight, so that they can determine where they're going. I mean, it impacts so much if you don't have that ability to filter out those sounds. Mm. It can really change your experience of your world.
And from a sensory perspective, I mean, we've, as creatures, as organisms, we've evolved to really use a lot of our senses as survival mechanisms.
Yeah.
Right? Mm. We're using our senses to perceive threats, to stay ahead of threats.
Right.
And avoid them. And now you put an individual with tens of thousands of years of collective genetic experience of trying to use our senses in that way, and you put them in an environment like Manhattan, which is a sensory overload. There's a part of us that is not going to be able to get away from that more primal inner being of threat recognition and detection.
Say that again. Right. That sounds wonderful.
There's a part of us, I think, where we've come accustomed to using our senses in a defensive way, in a coping mechanism, to recognize and scan our environment for threats and danger.
Yeah.
That when you put that individual, any one of us human beings who have had a whole history of using our senses for preservation and survival, you put us in the city where it's just an overwhelming sensory overload. Mm. I don't think that we can ever become truly accustomed to it.
I don't think we necessarily have to. But there is the need to be able to turn off that scanning for danger and come into social communication with others. And that can be done through the senses, through seeing other people, hearing them, touching them, smelling them unconsciously, eating food together. That's something that helps us turn down that fight or flight, checking out, you know, that use of the senses.
Right.
And, you know, we can consciously make that choice because we are not, you know, prey animals living, you know, on the desert, you know. So we have a conscious, you know, choice that we can make, hopefully. And if you can't, if it's very hard for you to turn off that search, you know, mission, you might experiment with playing with your senses. When you do come into a safe environment with people, slow down and eat. Mm. Listen to what they're saying. Listen to the music playing in the background. Smell the food. This brings you into more of a relaxed state. There are two ways that this information can be processed.
It's hard for me to turn that off. And maybe I'm just extra neurotic.
So this might be really wonderful. Yeah. I mean, because it's like when you do come out of the city.
But you have to turn it off to really enjoy being with people. If you're in the fight or flight mode.
Yeah,
and you're with people. It's like, you know, how can you engage with them?
At least one time per week where some kind of stimuli will make me nearly jump out of my skin.
Yeah.
You know, and there's things that I'll just never get used to, right?
Yeah. Some days it won't hit like a jackhammer. Some days will really be irritating. I mean, jackhammers are generally always irritating, but there are moments and times when a jackhammer isn't that bothersome. I don't know. Do you have that experience?
Not necessarily or an ambulance? More or the suddenness of it. You know, you ever hear a crane, you know, something hit metal on metal somewhere in the city, and it's really, really loud.
You know? And we're supposed to startle at that. And then you're also supposed to relax afterwards. And if you have trouble relaxing, well, that's where you might want to use your senses to find some safety, see another person, see that it's okay, talk, laugh with someone. Oh, my God, that was so loud.
People always talk about meditating as a way to get back in touch or get away from the anxiety or the fear or the flight that you're talking about. They often use meditation, but you're saying you can orient yourself through your senses as another way.
Yes, absolutely. And there's a wonderful – that's what Tantra is about. Tantra is about orienting yourself through your senses.
I did want to make it, you know, as clear as we could, that Ben makes a good point, that survival mechanism of these senses. Like, imagine taste. If you don't have any taste, you could be drinking sour milk and not know it. You could be eating really sour, bad food and not knowing
poison
it.
Poison and not know.
And you were talking earlier about little babies, that they have this defense. Say a little something about
babies, that. Babies, you know, in generally, foods that are sweet are safe. So infants instinctually, first of all, infants have incredible taste buds and incredible smell capacity because they use that to survive. And the taste of mother's milk is very sweet. Tastes that are sweet are safe. So babies do not like bitter tastes. Bitter tastes are associated with potential poison.
And, yeah.
So that's why a lot of children don't like broccoli. They don't like spinach. They don't like bitter greens, bitter foods. They'll be like, bleh.
I must have been a weird kid.
You know, wow. And the sweets like are more naturally okay.
Spinach, yeah. Oh, really? Watch that. You don't have that safety
And, of course, that
measure,
can be modulated right? based yeah, on yeah, what yeah. the mother eats. But you know, it's an important distinction and to understand, you know, your children don't want their broccoli because broccoli tastes bitter. And there's a little bit of an instinctual revulsion.
And obviously something that's bitter could also cause you death. That's what ultimately
could kill you.
Is signaling to the infant.
So, yeah.
Bitter food might have a poison in it.
Yeah.
So even as adults, nobody likes bitter food. You know, so.
But we lose our taste buds as we grow older and we become accustomed to it and we start to enjoy it. Like you hate Brussels sprouts when you're five and you love them when you're 50.
Is that why we like scotch?
Yes,
oh, yeah. That's why scotch is an old man.
It's why alcohol starts to be more palatable because you're losing the taste buds.
You're
starting to filter out. You know, it's like there are different social overrides that happen too with that. But yeah,
We have a lot to cover today. We're going to ask for your calls. 212-757-5555. Not just yet, Ben. Why don't you give people a reground.
Yes.
Everybody with a different kind of sound. Can you do that?
Oh, yeah.
All right, so you can't make it out there to Rockaway or the beach today?
Yeah.
Jones Beach.
But what does that do to you?
That sound of the waves. It, like, starts to totally regulate my nervous system. I just kind of start to drop down.
Exactly. I drop down. That's a good way to put it.
I breathe differently.
Yeah.
You'll sometimes time your breathing to waves. You're breathing. You know, it's like we want to entrain to things, and you'll entrain to waves. Absolutely. That's why waves help
people
sleep at night.
It's funny, you know, Armand used to say people didn't go to the beach to look at the ocean. You know, you think you're going to the ocean to look. You're really going for the sound.
Yeah, and think of what you're smelling,
because
too.
It regulates your breathing. It also makes you feel like back in the womb if you take it that far.
Yes.
But it just slows everything down.
So I'm with Nassim on this one. For me, the trip to the beach is all about when you're getting close and you smell the salt in the air.
Of course.
When you're getting close enough to the ocean, to the shore, to smell the salt that is in the air, you know.
I'm with that, too. I love
that.
You know, and it's nice to have your clothes that way for a few days after you've been there, too, right?
Right. And then think about when you dive in or dive through a wave and how it touches your whole body. You get that whole body touch. And then if you can float, that it's just holding you and you're getting that sort of all over body touch and it feels so good. You know, it's like it just puts you back in your body and you just, it just, that
See,
kind
when I
of
jump in the water,
so
I think
important.
Of Jaws.
Well, I start to think that too as I'm floating more than my mind goes
ben,
to.
Do you have that feeling,
done
Ben?
It.
When you go to the ocean, like the soundtrack of Jaws comes through.
It's totally.
I mean, that movie ruined the beach.
If there's a way to go, though, I can't think of too many better ways to go.
Oh,
I mean, really?
Yeah,
oh,
really.
I don't know about that.
I'm a Pisces, so I'm a water person.
Me too.
You know?
Right.
Something about I don't know.
Yeah.
I was watching videos of these guys surfing the largest waves ever surfed in Portugal.
That's
They're
amazing.
Like 80-foot waves, right?
Right.
And there's something about that where, I mean, I said to my friend, what happens when the wave breaks over this guy? He's got to be
under
for a good 90 seconds. You got to time that exquisitely.
Yes.
And yet there's something, I don't know. To me, water is very powerful, very comforting, unforgiving, and that in a way is comforting. It's beautiful.
Yeah. Nassim, do that again with when you go into the water.
When you go into the water, and especially when you're, like, diving through the waves at the shore, I'm sure a lot of New Yorkers have had that experience, and you dive under and you feel the pressure of the water. It's almost like being born again. That's the thing about birth. You're, like, coming through a pressured canal. you get that pressure all over your body and you come out the other side.
Oh.
And there's just that feeling. It's like a whole body massage for me. I feel like it's just like just going right over me. And then floating in the water and just feeling the touch of the water on your skin.
So I want to take some calls. What is this? It is music. But no, it's not music, but it's a sound. Yeah. What is this doing to you right now? What sounds in your life are really prominent that you really enjoy? Or do you feel a little deadened? Do you feel like your senses are deadened? I think just playing this could be a vehicle to get all of your senses alive again. 212-757-5555. We're curious about you. It's the end of summer. We wanted to play a little bit of the waves. We played this last week, and we've got a few emails that they love. A few people were at the shore at the time that we were playing it, and they said we sounded better than the shore did. So we wanted to play it again and do something about sensuality and get a lot of feedback today, a lot of input from you as to how alive are your senses. Are you with a partner whose senses are dead?
Or maybe just different than, like, maybe, you know, your partner's really attuned to smell and touch and you're attuned to sight and sound.
Mm.
You may have a little, you know, misconnect, but you also might be able to help each other explore those senses in different ways.
That's
a lot can happen around senses and touch, and a lot of it has to do with the environment you were raised in. And what happened around those senses and sensory input. It's like how we are impacted by and interact with the world is through our senses. And we often forget it. We're so in our heads or we're looking at our phones. And we are so like entrained. Like the visual sense, I think, is the right now the most impacted, the most demanded. But we're becoming more and more visual in our understanding of the world. Like we're going back to hieroglyphics, basically, with our emoticons. So it's becoming more visual processing.
I actually never thought of it that way.
Yeah, people are talking about that. Like
it's crazy.
These emojis are like hieroglyphics. So anyways, that's a visual perception world instead of one that's very tactile or, you know, social engagement is a very tactile experience. And we're kind of cutting off a huge portion of our capacity to relax if we're not in social contact. Talking to each other on the phone, calling and talking to someone is so different.
To help people's senses become more alive. The more in touch with people, the more your senses are going to be alive.
Potentially, absolutely.
And if you're a person whose senses are fairly dulled, that one way back in is through social contact. Certainly when you said going to a restaurant with four or five people, that you turn off the fight and flight use of your senses and you start to sink into the enjoyment of the food, let's say. Do you enjoy food more by yourself or more when you're with other people?
I was going to say that. Sometimes I enjoy it more by myself because then I'm just fully in the experience of me and eating and you know, how often do we eat in front of the TV? You know, how amazing would it be to turn off the TV and eat and smell your food and take the time to really taste it and be engaged with your food in the moment and all the opportunities it has for you. So something
they say,
around
you know,
the
that people swallow their food after like seven chews, so they don't really even get the flavor of the food. So if you're overeating, you know, you could make a smaller portion for yourself because you're not really tasting the food after six or seven chews anyway. 212-757-5555.
We have Lisa on the line. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. How are you?
Good, Lisa. You enjoy the hot day out there?
I am, actually. I'm on lunch, and I love this time slot for you guys because I get to spend a little time with you.
Oh, we love having you. Tell us about your senses. What's your dominant sense?
Right now, I'm operating in a sense of smell. So I recently started a second job. And normally I would take the highway, but someone gave me a back route through all these hills and winding roads. And I had the window open and I could just smell the flowers, you know, and I'm so used to concrete that I didn't even realize that I haven't been smelling flowers.
Wow.
And it just made the trip enjoyable. So, and it makes me look forward to getting there. You know what I mean? It's just you can smell the flowers, the moss, the houses are beautiful. There's no traffic on the back road.
Are you in the Hudson Valley by any chance?
Actually, I'm in New Jersey, believe it or not.
Okay.
Wow.
And not even
are
in
they,
the part
are they
of
hiring?
Jersey. they hired me. That's what I know. So, but it just really brought to my attention when I actually realized it that I haven't stopped to smell the roses in a long time, you know? And it just really made me feel good. It really took me back to days when I was, you know, when I was a kid and I was in summer camp. And
right.
we would go hiking. And I was like, wow, I haven't smelled this smell in a million years. So it's a good experience. And it made starting the new position a great experience, you know?
Yeah.
So I saw some new things and I smelled some old things that I forgot that I knew.
That's beautiful.
That's great.
A perfect example.
And she makes a point that it brings you back to smells that you had as a child.
Right.
Right?
That
smell, I think more than any other sense, correct me if I'm wrong, smell can bring you back to childhood as quicker than any other sense.
Yeah, and like I said at the beginning, it's connected to the emotional centers, emotional and memory centers before it goes into the thalamus to be filed into experience. So it's like an immediate thing. And
right.
what you've done is you've created an association of something pleasant with work, which is potentially something stressful. So your work is going
right.
to be less stressful.
It
That's
was such
how it
a
works.
Great. Yeah, it was such a great visit. And immediately when I took a whiff, when I realized what was coming through my nostrils, I was back at summer camp.
Nice.
Like, just that fast.
Yeah.
I was like, I know this. But it kind of saddened me only because I realized it's been so long since I took the opportunity. But now that I have it, I'm just like, when I drive past, no air conditioner on, sunroof open, windows down.
Beautiful.
And I'm smelling.
And you might even be driving slower so that you get a little more, right?
Yeah, I absolutely am. I am. I absolutely am.
Lisa,
so,
you're great. You're on the clock now, so you got to get moving.
you're absolutely right. Okay,
thank you, Lisa, for calling.
Thank
all right,
Lisa.
Bye-bye.
212-757-5555.
She makes a great point. The smell is so closely tied to memory, and it's like you said, Nasima, smell it just pierces right to that part of the brain that processes memory before it even goes conscious.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
And music does that, too. I mean, when you hear a song that you used to hear when you were 10 or 12 or 15 or something, it can bring you right back to those days.
Yeah.
Like you can remember what was going on outside, like winter or, you know, like barbecuing or whatever, something going on.
Right.
When you can hear certain songs.
Well, for me, when I was like 16, 17 and driving, I had like a 40-minute drive to school. You know, all the songs at that time in the early 80s, late 70s, early 80s always remind me of driving my car to school.
So do you picture yourself as you hear these songs?
Yeah, I can just feel it. It's like that freedom of like a 16, 17-year-old taking care of herself and singing these songs and belting them out. You know, it's just – it just brings back
– It's amazing,
That's
right?
why I love these songs. And I remember them all. They have like – I remember every single word and, you know, cheesy songs and great songs and, you know –
212-757-5555.
Music is powerful like that.
It really
you know,
is.
It can take you back to a specific time and place, or it can remind you of a person, specific person.
Right.
I know growing up, my father, anytime he was in the house, would have music playing.
Mm-hmm. My dad, too.
All kinds of music. And, you know, so much of that stuff that he played was a lot of jazz.
Yeah.
He's a big BGO fan and fan of all kinds of jazz. And
right.
a lot of that music just makes me think of my father. 212-757-5555 is the number to call. You're listening to The Positive Mind here on 99.5 FM, WBAI. We have time for one more quick call before we take a musical break. We have Colleen on the line. Hi, Colleen.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Thanks
Hello.
For calling in.
Hey.
Are you the opera person?
I am the opera person.
I remember you,
it
Colleen.
Is me.
How are you? So what's your dominant sense?
I would say it's kind of interesting for me because I have an auditory processing disorder, so I don't process auditory information properly all the time.
That's so
sometimes people say something to me, and I'll hear something completely different, which has always been interesting for me. I really enjoy touch, though.
Okay.
If I can't, if I'm having trouble understanding somebody verbally, or in my work, I work with a lot of people who don't have very good verbal skills, but they might, you know, like shake my hand or give me a high five, and that can be a really, you know, kind of interesting way to communicate.
Yes, absolutely. If somebody's having trouble understanding, incorporating touch really does help them understand more. In fact, they did studies with doctors who touched their patient on the shoulder and gave them information about medication, that those patients were more compliant. The doctors who touched them while they gave them the information about their medication or about their, you know, whatever was going on, they were more compliant. So touch is incredibly important. And it's great that you figured out that if I'm touching someone or they're touching me while they're giving the information, that my auditory processing is more online, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
They work in 100%. Concert. They work in concert with each other. Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Colleen, for the call.
Oh, you're welcome.
It's totally interesting.
We're about to go to our musical break. Otherwise, we'd hold you. I have other questions for you, but let's go to, you know, we have to go to our musical break. So thanks for calling, Colleen.
We are taking calls at 212-757-5555. Want to hear how you use your senses. What's the most powerful sense to you? Which is most tied to your memories, and we're exploring how senses can affect our personality and how we can use our senses to help us lead more positively
minded
life.
Here's a question, Ben, before we go to the musical break. How are your parents and their senses?
Yeah.
Because there's a direct connection between how much you use your senses and how much your parents used theirs. So if your father was a musician, call us. Give us a call. 212-757-5555. Let's go to a break.
Thank you.
Eric Satie. How do you say that? Gymnopédies?
Gymnopédies.
Yeah, it's French. Mm. Anyway, good any time of year, Eric Satie. But we hope that that kind of reminds you of the treasure that you have in your ears.
Yeah.
That it's a treasure. I mean, it's gold. I mean,
it is.
You know, I mean, you can have all the money in the world, but if you don't have your sound, your sense of hearing, or your sense of sight, or your sense of smell, or your sense of touch or taste, you know, your treasure is diminished. So
I have this philosophical discussion with my father pretty often about which would be, if you had to be blind or deaf, if you had to lose one of those senses,
right,
which one would you rather go on with or without?
Yeah, it's a good
and it's really, it's hard.
We should poll them because I have a blind brother who's been legally, totally blind since he's 17, but I also have a deaf cousin. And we had this debate, and the mother of the deaf child said, you know, you're much more in danger if you're deaf, believe it or not, than if you're blind. The world is a much more dangerous place.
Yeah, because it does sort of place you in an environment. You use sound a lot to determine distances, people. Yeah, I can understand
that. And you live in a solitary, private world. A blind person can communicate with all types, and so can the deaf, but it's hard work.
Yeah.
Anyway, we have Pat on the line, but 212-757-5555. We don't want to get into that debate. We want to get into the discussion of what senses are most alive in you, what pleasures you're getting through your senses, and maybe even what – yeah, well, we'll get to that later about the parents. But
Hi, Pat.
Hi.
So what's your dominant
– Yeah.
What's your dominant – well, you tell us what you want to talk about. Go
ahead. I don't know if it's so dominant because I certainly love to eat, but and I love to visually see things. But I had a remarkable experience that I don't know if many people have had or could have, but my husband and I bought an older wooden sailboat, quite a large one, 53 feet.
Wow.
About 15 years ago. We lived on it for 13 years here in New York.
Wow.
And my husband's a violin maker, and it's like a big cello or a bass viol. I mean, it's, you know.
You're in the hole of
the
cello,
mast.
Right.
Right. It's like the mast, which is like the sound post, and the rigging is like the strings. Mm-hmm. But we just thought, okay, visually it seems like that. And one day when we were sailing with a lot of wind, I mean, you've got all these wonderful senses going on, of course.
Of course, sure.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, the rigging started humming this most beautiful sound. Mm. And the two of us were just like, oh, my God, that's amazing. Mm. And it brought both of us to kind of different places, but wonderful places.
Yeah.
You know, it just was so incredible. And we've had other people on the boat, certainly, that have experienced that and said, what is that?
Mm.
And I don't know if it's unique from what other people tell me that have fiberglass boats and other boats. They don't hear that.
Hmm.
So I think
it must be
something that it's like a string instrument, you know, with the wood and the metal rigging and just the way it has that belly in it.
But it's
just pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
I wonder if the imagination enhances the experience. When you're in a fiberglass boat, I mean, you don't necessarily imagine so much. But if you're in a wooden boat, and, you know, you can imagine, you're feeling like you're organic. You're part of the wood almost.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder if that is an element of it, that you're imagining like being part of this boat. Is that at all part of it, Pat?
I think it probably is, because I have to say also I get horribly seasick. And when I bought the boat 15 years ago, I said, what am I doing? I mean, this is crazy.
That's a challenge.
But I only got seasick on the boat once, and that was when we first got it after a hurricane. And it was, I kind of forgave the boat for that. But
sure.
I don't seem to get as motion sick. And they even say that, like, whales don't try to bump up against wooden boats. It's like nature. It's organic. It's alive somehow.
Yeah.
I think you kind of get transported, your imagination and other things.
The best time I ever had on a boat, I was sailing along the Irish coast, was waking up in the morning listening to classical music on a calm bay.
Yeah.
So
it's wonderful.
You're Pat, you elements. Brought that back to me. I Thank forgot you, that Pat. One. Thanks for giving us a call.
Okay.
Have a good day.
Bye-bye. What a beautiful multi-sensory experience.
Really,
she
music of the rigging. 212-757-5555. We're talking about senses, all things senses. We haven't heard anything about what? Haven't heard anything about touch.
Well, the thing about senses that I'll just relate to that boat experience is that that's kind of an experience when everything on the boat kind of came into a certain harmony. The wind, the waves, the structure of the boat. Mm. And when your senses are all kind of attuned, you can find a real flow in your body. You can find a real flow in your life. And I think that's why we wanted to talk about the senses today on the positive mind, because it helps you have a more positive mind if your senses are engaged in an equal kind of harmonic way. Mm. If you have access to all of these things and if they all come together, you can really have a really positive mind about life, right, about the world, about your experience of the world.
And the mind isn't so positive when it just is going in circles and circles and circles. One beauties of the senses,
focused on one sense.
Senses can bring us out of our minds and really get us back in touch with our
bodies.
Flow, like you say, and our bodies, and a more enjoyable place. The mind is useful, but it's not always the best place to be.
It gets really crowded.
So we have Michael on the line.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
Hi, Michael.
Thank you for this topic. It's central to my life and work. As an artist, a multidiscipline artist and teacher of the arts. So I wanted to make a comment about that and also ask a health question about that.
Sure.
My senses are so highly attuned, and I teach techniques to my students of writing, of acting, how to make their senses more acute and make it central to their work.
Can you make this concrete for us? We want to hear this. I've longed for a call from somebody like you. How do you do this? Go ahead.
Now I'm on the spot. There are exercises such as exercises that have existed and ones that I've created. One that I've created is I'll tell my students to tap into a memory. We'll be dealing with a specific subject. I'll read them a piece. Say, there's this piece by this kid who wanted to draw whatever he wanted, and his teacher and his mother made him be a conformist. And apparently the poet, who was a child, committed suicide after writing it. So I might have them do a free write on a time when they felt misunderstood, and then tap into the memory of that in all their senses. So I'll have them write down one sense, one part of that memory. It could be a good memory, too. I just gave you that one example.
Yeah, I understand.
And I'll say, write the smell, a smell you had when in that memory. Mm. And write, we go through all the five senses and they make a list. Mm-hmm. And, it's like you start to compile the sensory scales that you're going to use as an artist.
Mm. Right.
And I do that in acting as well, the method acting techniques of the actor studio, doing sense memory work, just exploring a cup of coffee that you have in the morning. But,
And does this keep you in tune yourself? I mean, do you randomly notice your senses picking things up that most people won't pick up, and that you really enjoying, relishing the experiences, like a cup of coffee?
Yes. I mean, I've always been like that. And, when I was a kid, my older brother said, when you eat, you bathe in it. Because I was experiencing my meals with everything.
He was a smart guy. That's a great image.
Yeah. Part of where I get my sense of humor.
Oh, so you're a perfect caller for us.
Thank you. But then there's the downside of it, as you were talking about the noises of the city.
Yes.
My senses are so acute you don't have to have particularly acute senses to be so disturbed by the north end of the city. Yeah. So I have a serious jackhammer issue, constant construction at night, and then the rage starts to come in because I know that they're violating the law, and you can't really fight them.
Right.
And then, so here's a specific health question. To sleep every single night, year after year, I have to have all these fans on for white noise because the sudden staccato noise of a truck's going by, hitting a metal plate will wake me up. Okay. So in order to not hear, I have to overload my hearing with the sound of white noise.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I wake up feeling a little deaf from it. So I'm wondering if I'm going to have long-term damage from this. we adapt. We do what we have to do to survive, so that makes us stronger, I think, but...
Well, you're not a rock musician, so I would think that you're not in that much danger of your hearing.
But what about psychological effects?
Right, and I do have a question for you. Do you feel like you have a little bit of like a traumatic childhood history?
Oh, yeah. I was born with certain severe birth defects. I had a lot of surgery as a baby and then as a teenager. Okay.
Mm. Yeah, because this can make your system a little bit hypersensitive, and there are ways, there are different techniques. You can give me a call later about working with sound sensitivity, because what it can do, if you're really sensitive to sounds, you can have a higher sort of tone and anxiety in your system, or just a higher, you're functioning at a higher level, and there are ways to sort of work with sound and the perception of sound that you can modulate. So call the center.
One last question.
That's part of why that's part of what makes me do the work at the level I do as an artist, like, and as a teacher of the art.
Yeah.
It's a blessing and a curse in a way, it sounds
right.
Like.
Right, so it'd be nice to be able to have the choice.
But here's my last question. Does your brother envy you? Or do you envy your brother?
we have an equally envious relationship. Because he's an artist too. Yeah, a lot of sibling rivalry. But he's a painter and art teacher in that way, and I'm a writer and actor.
That's,
and I started out as a drawer, and he started out wanting to do theater, and we kind of switched.
okay.
That's great.
Michael, thanks for the call.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
But who should I ask for when I call?
Nassima. Call 212-757-4488. Give her 10 minutes after the show.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks so much.
You're
okay,
welcome.
Bye.
Sure.
Yeah, and the other thing about the hearing loss is I think it's 75 or 80 decibels you need to be exposed to consistently for hearing loss. I don't think a fan... Not even multiple fans, I don't think.
I don't think he's concerned about hearing loss, but just about the psychological, like the effect of not being able to relax.
And he wakes up a certain way.
And be able to,
sometimes.
It's a lot of startle. But it sounds like, when he describes him and his brother, it sounds like they had sort of maybe a creative, sensual home that they
I was going to ask about the dad, but we didn't have time.
You know?
It would prove our point, which is we're going to talk about your parents, your upbringing. And, you know, would your parents prefer you not to have a lively senses? I mean, you could picture a guy like Michael, could sensitive system could be a burden on the parents, because your aliveness is kind of cutting into their experience. They're doing their lives, and they have to pay attention to this very lively, alert kid.
Yeah.
So
children are
so
sensual.
Which of your parents would encourage you not to indulge your senses, not to develop your senses. In other words, not to enjoy life. So this vehicle of the senses as a way of enjoying life can be a hassle to parents. And we're trying to make the connection that, you might inherit your predilection or preference of sensation in the first place from your parents, but also if your sensation and you haven't, like Lisa, hasn't had the sense of smell in years.
Right.
You know, why does she go through life that way? Mm. I mean, maybe she got accustomed to it when she was young. Maybe her parents didn't want her to have too much stimuli.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a theory.
Well, and I also think about like walking into different people's homes and how that home is laid out. What's the sensory layout of the home? Is it totally austere? Like, I don't, you know, if I look at Architectural Digest and I see a totally white house, I'm like, no, that doesn't suit my sensual needs.
Right.
You know, I would like to see more color and texture
and
so that's all part of like the environment that you know, did you grow up in an Italian home with food hanging everywhere and all these smells coming from the kitchen? Or was it a very austere?
Yes. When you walked in the door of your house, which sense was the most stimulated? And at what time of day? I mean,
and that's
in my house,
5
o'clock at night, you know, your nose was lit up.
Right.
And in the morning, let's say your hearing was
lit up.
Hearing
everybody. Yeah, hearing we get up and make sounds. And
212-757-5555, and we have Cal on the line. Hello, Cal.
Hi.
How are you?
How's it going?
Good.
I'm good.
Good. Go ahead.
I don't know. I resonate with a lot of what you've been talking about. I think I'm really interested in sound.
Hmm.
I know that, or just thinking about what you were just talking about, when I was little, I would go to sleep to books on tape pretty much every night.
Uh-huh.
And it was, pretty hard for me to just even be alone without, sound playing. So I think, I don't know if that's why now I'm so into sound, but that was an early start. Hmm. But I think also, I do like a lot of art that is, that blends senses. So it's, a lot of sound connected to movement and visual stuff.
Right.
Were your parents quiet people?
Kind of.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they listened to music, but I grew up in the suburbs on Long Island.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And I would say I really think of it as just a extremely mandatedly quiet. I mean, there's a lot of noise from yard work and whatnot, but it just kind of,
right.
There's an attitude of don't talk to anyone.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So books on tape were kind of companions for you at nighttime.
Yeah, I think so, for sure.
The sound.
And an opportunity to sort of maybe live more of a life imaginarily that you really couldn't live, as you were listening. I mean, as you were living. And I am curious about, it's there's a need for children to be loud, and to hear sounds and sort of see how they can sort of modulate their sounds and their voice and all of that. And if it's a quiet, it could sort of sound like, I scream here and nobody will hear,
some level.
It can happen.
Yeah, I was working with kids this morning at a camp, and they really make a lot of noise.
They do.
And the other thing is, getting them, they all just really want to see their iPads. And you were talking about how visual, I also think that a lot of people think that we're a really visually dominant culture right now.
Yes. Yeah. And what are they missing? Tell them.
I don't know if it's simple enough that I could just tell them, but I think I can do stuff with them that makes sound more interesting. But one thing that's really interesting that is from this book, called Sonic Agency by Brandon LaBelle.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not his term, but I can't remember who he's referencing. But he's talking about being in the city as a place to overhear people around you.
Right.
And kind of get a sense of what's going on this other level of communication. And he talks about how superior to freedom of speech, which is so popular and so American, mm-hmm. is freedom of listening.
That's a very different story. Who's the author on that? The Freedom of Listening?
No, Sonic Agency.
Sonic Agency.
Yeah. Brandon LaBelle. Brandon LaBelle. But if you search Freedom of Listening, you can find the woman who coined the term.
Yeah.
That really stuck with me.
That's really beautiful, because listening is the most important thing to speaking. You need somebody to listen. And
I just have a sense, Cal, you need to turn up the music and start dancing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Good for you, Cal.
Thanks for the call, Cal.
Thanks for the call.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye-bye. Great information.
212-757-5555.
You are tuned in if you're just joining us to The Positive Mind here on 99.5 FM WBAI. I'm Ben Starr here with Kevin O'Donohue and Nasima Diane Deemer. We're talking about our senses and how we can use our senses to live a more positively minded life. And if this programming is something that you enjoy and you're appreciating, we would just urge you to become a BAI buddy today. Go to WBAI.org and become a BAI buddy in the name of the positive mind. Help us reduce the need and intensity and frequency and length of future fund drives by giving a recurring $10 tax-deductible donation each month. That's WBAI.org, and click on Ways to Donate. And we are going to be taking another short musical break, but we will continue to take your calls.
But, Ben, I want to echo that because it's really a plug for our show. If you can do it during our show or when you do become a BAI buddy, that you do it in the name of our show. It plugs our show. It lets BAI know you think that this programming is valuable, and we need that kind of support from you. So it's $10 taken right out of a credit card once a month. You know,
easy.
It's two coffees for a month, you know. So we really appreciate, and the station appreciates, getting certain donations in the name of a certain show.
Mm-hmm.
So we would love you to support this show by just donating $10 a month, taken right out of your credit card. You don't have to look at it. But it says a lot to the general manager and to the station. And you get to say, I'm a buddy. I mean, here I am. I'm a member of this great station.
And the station will provide you with a tax document at the end of the year so that you can write it off on your taxes. I mean, it's a win-win for everybody. You get to feel good, like you're supporting a good cause. And
I think Ben, Peter called in and he says every time he listens to BAI, he knows that he's a member.
Yeah.
So, you know, it kind of enhances
this is your station.
It enhances the enjoyment of your listening since we're talking about senses.
There you go.
So, all right.
Listening.
212-757-5555. Let's take that musical break.
All right. We'll be right back shortly after this. We'll be right back. of Unlimited Orchestra, Love's Theme. You know, Kevin, I used to stay up late, and that was a theme song for a late-night talk show host in New York City.
I remember. I can't remember who.
I know who it was.
That's gone through decades, that tune.
And what does that tune bring up for you? What do you
polyester.
Remember? Polyester.
Yeah. Right? Texture. Let's think. Silk shirts with big collars.
Yeah, and big stinky cars.
Why that? I don't
get
that.
You know, like the 70s, all the you know, the emissions, and they were just big cars.
I see.
And like, I don't know, that's like a song, it just really touches in my heart somewhere. It just makes me want to expand and be big.
It's like a mixture of relaxation but also expansion. I could see your point. We have Kelly on the line.
Yes, hello.
How are you?
Hi, Kelly.
I'm okay. I told your screener that I wanted to talk about augmenters and reducers.
Tell us about
it. Yeah, well, when I was in college years ago, I learned about this concept of augmenters and reducers. And augmenters are people who, usually it's a thing of sensitivity, people who augment often experience senses much greater than the average person, mm-hmm. and so they tend to want to tone things down, they want to be a little more quiet, and they have real serious problems with sensory override. Mm-hmm. And reducers, on the other hand, these are people that don't get enough stimulation even in a typical environment. Mm. And so these are people that would go to like an amusement park and ride on, you know, a really scary roller coaster ride or something, because they want to jack up their quota or whatever of sensory satisfaction. Mm-hmm. And I was surprised that you didn't bring any of this up, because I think, you know, it's a psychological concept that
sure
I think that, you know, that I'm surprised you haven't discussed this part of it, but that interested me a lot, that idea of reducers and augmenters, and I've tried to figure out which one I was, or, you know, it's not really clear to me which one I am.
Mm. Well, do you need excitement?
Not all the time. I mean, well, I have to preface something. I've called before. I have bipolar disorder.
Okay.
And so, to be honest, I've been both, alternately.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see.
So,
for sure.
You know, and, you know, when I've been depressed, I've been an augmenter, I guess. And when I've been excited, I've been, you know,
a reducer.
Makes sense. Mm-hmm. So I've been both. I've been both alternately. Mm. And, of course, obviously, right now I'm medicated. And so in a way, I'm kind of neither. You know, but the other thing also that I'm aware of on medication, my senses are dulled. You know, colors don't speak to me in the way that they did before I started taking medications. Mm-hmm. I used to draw and paint. I don't really do that anymore. Mm. And I also fool around with music. I own a piano, and I used to play guitar, and I used to teach guitar. Mm-hmm. And I used to take really profound pleasure in music of, like, all different genres and types.
Right.
And now, you know, even though I listen to music today, I'm not transported. But also, I've listened to a lot of the same stuff. You know, you get accustomed to hearing even...
Did you go to a lot of shows in your day?
Well, yeah, when I was young, you know, when I was like 14, I think the first real serious nationally known group that did a concert, I grew up in Charlottesville, Virginia, and I went to elementary school, junior high school, and high school, and first year of college. I was just there for about 10 years, and there was a place called University Hall, which is this giant circular, you know, like an arena, and I remember seeing the Association. You know, Cherish, Never My Love, Windy. Mm. And that was the first really big nationally known group that I ever saw in concert. And I saw it at the University of Virginia at University Hall when I was about 14. I mean, I wasn't driving. You know, I think my mother and my father dropped me off and picked me up to have the concert. And I went by myself, and I, you know, ran into friends.
You might be an augmenter. I mean, take Satie. When we played Satie... And during the break, did you hear that?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I actually have a recording of that. I have a tremendous library of music, and you know, the you know, put me in a niche. I guess the niche I would be is, like, you know, consumer niche. I'd be like books and music.
Yeah, of course.
Because I own hundreds of books and I own hundreds of music recordings.
Yes.
I've listened to a tremendous amount of music in my lifetime.
Right.
I've listened to thousands of hours of music. And I had a real interest in music from a young age, and
mm-hmm.
I played a lot of music growing up. I got involved in electronics and stereo equipment and everything. And so I had like a, you know, kind of like a general idea of how to set up a place acoustically so I could hear music in a certain way.
Yeah.
And I grew up listening to a tremendous amount of music from a very young age.
By yourself?
And, you know.
Did you generally?
I realized I didn't have really what it took to, let's say, compose or perform or teach even.
Right.
But I did have a profound respect, and I still do, for very fine musicianship and, you know, music, classical musicians. I have one or two friends who are classical musicians, and I have tremendous respect for what they do.
Of course, of course. But, you know, it kind of reminds me of the concept we talked about last week when we did the ocean. We talked about extroversion and introversion.
Oh, yeah, they're related.
You know,
sure,
so they are.
Course,
augmenters are, let's see, augmenters are introverts and reducers are extroverts. So, I'm wondering, like, the association is kind of, I'm wondering if you're an introvert. I'm wondering if you're like,
you know,
refreshed by being
younger,
off by yourself.
When I was younger, I was extremely extroverted when I was younger.
Uh-huh.
And also, I think, tied in with, let's say, pre-mania or hypomania or something.
Right.
And I was very bigger than life, and I was a very vocal student, very, you know, I was outstanding in more ways than one.
Sure.
And, you know, I went into student politics, and I became an Eagle Scout at 14, and, you know, so I was a very, very extraordinarily busy kid right up until my first episode where I was hospitalized.
Do you use music therapeutically now? Do you use music
therapeutically? Oh, yeah, sure, of course I do. Yeah, you know, it's like, you know, it's like you go to the refrigerator and you want to figure out what would be a good thing to snack on, and I feel that way about music. You know, like, do I want to hear something classical, or do I want to hear something upbeat or something soothing?
Exactly.
And I do look at it that way. I look at soundscapes as, you know, kind of like a, in like a therapeutic manner, you know?
And so I'm just going to close out with this because we have three other calls, but
sure.
It doesn't matter if you're an augmenter or a reducer or the label. It matters matters what you get regenerated by. What rejuvenates?
Well, I'm in this like middle zone where I'm neither an augmenter or a reducer, but I don't have like really profound experiences hardly anymore because I'm highly medicated, and in some ways I'm stilted in ways. I can see it in my own life. I can see that, you know, my orientation to things is somewhat stilted.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people laugh a lot more easily than I do.
Have you ever experimented with forcing?
Because we have a few other calls.
Right,
well, I don't want to get into it. I don't want to interrupt
Kelly, I appreciate your call, and we want to hear from you in the future. Stay well. Stay alive.
Yeah, keep listening. We'll keep talking.
Keep your senses alive.
Yeah.
All right, thank you very much, Kevin. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Dan, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Right.
212-757-5555.
I was just curious if he or anybody who's experiencing like a numbing of their senses, if you just sort of put a little extra attention, like take a piece of chocolate and take some time with it, to really smell it and taste it and just to give yourself some time to maybe start opening your senses, even though you feel like they're dulled, there might be a way to not necessarily override the medication, but just to give yourself a little bit more of a sensual experience.
You know, I've heard
or find which one is still available to you. Maybe touch is still available or smell, which one is most available, and play with, you know, experimenting with it a little bit more consciously.
It's a great technique. I mean, there's a woman who does bites of chocolate through the day. She dances through her day with bites of chocolate, the sensuality of the tasting to remind her to get back in touch through the day. I think coffee would be one too, but then but these things are stimulants. And I don't know that chocolate has that texture that you're tasting, that you're really getting in touch with.
Yeah.
We have Brad on the line, 212-757-5555. 212-757-5555. He's coming through, but let's talk.
Well,
go ahead. Talk about what.
Well, what I'm going to say, like in a few minutes, we're probably going to do like a little sensual meditation.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
That will sort of encourage people to explore their senses and see which one is most accessible to them, and mm-hmm. and sort of maybe beef up the other ones who are not. So the senses are so important.
I think we want to talk about ethnicity too.
Really?
Right? I mean, yes, I do. I like, we mentioned like
growing up in an Italian family.
Growing up in an Irish family or an Italian family or a Jewish family or a Polish family or, you know, what kind of senses.
A WASPy family, if I can say that.
Were emphasized. Was sensation.
What was acceptable and what was unacceptable?
Or was sensation not valued in your upbringing?
And there's a time when you mentioned, like, you know, kids and their, you know, their feeling of their body and stuff. There are times during development where, you know, especially in the love sexuality development, which is also a very sort of sensual understanding of the world, that parents can sort of put a damper on that.
Yes.
There's a time when you're developing
sensuality
your
is a threat to your parents.
There's a time when you're developing your autonomy, when you and the world are one. Like, everything you touch becomes you. And so all of your experiences in that age, it's like, you know, 8 months to 3 years, you're reaching out with your hands, you're taking things into your mouth, you're looking at things, you're having this identification of like, this is world, this is me. And then you start to separate, you know, you start to say, oh, wait, you know, that's outside of me. And I have an inside of me, and then it's like now me in relationship to people, and all these things involve the senses and how the senses were accepted or not within your home and encouraged. Or
I want to get back to this. We have Austin on the line. Hello, Austin.
Hello, hi everyone.
Hey,
hi.
How are you?
Great. This is my first time. No, this is my second time calling. Post the Armand era. My second time calling.
Okay. Welcome back.
Thanks. I just want to put two quick things out there, and then you guys can weave it into conversation as you will. What I said to the person who screened me, that as a child, I gravitated towards a bitter. I like sauerkraut and broccoli and all that, and I had kind of an aversion to fruits. Fruits tasted too tart, and sort of like they would sort of like feel like it was exploding in my mouth.
Mm.
And to this day, I don't like. I like drinking fruit juices a bit diluted, but I don't like eating them. And the other thing I want to get into
is it the citrus? Is it the citrus, or is it any? Let's say mango, or is it oranges, or is it lime?
More of an aversion to the citric, but I just don't like it, the mouthfeel of really any fruit per se.
I understand. Okay.
And then the other thing I want, then you guys can weave this in however you want, of course.
Sure.
As far as sensory overload, you know, the senses can manifest in very idiosyncratic ways, as I'm sure you guys know.
Mm-hmm.
I can have a great time dancing and being in an environment with this music, as long as it's music that I like or like enough, and in a groove that is palatable to me, you know. But at the same time, a museum can be sensory overload to me, because if I'm looking at one thing, I'm not looking at all the other things.
Of course.
And there's something disquieting to me about museums, because they're you have to focus
point.
On something and tune out everything that's around you.
That's mm-hmm. a fantastic, fantastic point. I have the same experience.
Yeah, me too.
I think most museums you need to go five times. You can only handle one segment at a time. But a lot of people want to rush through the whole museum and say, oh, I've been through the whole experience. It's not that way. But that's a very, very good point. What is it about seeing an image in a museum for so long and going to another one and being absorbed? So you must get absorbed into it, Austin, when you go to a museum. Are you kind of a porous person? Like you feel people? Are you empathic?
I'm very empathic. I don't know so much that I get absorbed in a museum. I'm more like sort of tune out. I can better concentrate at home with a book.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at, I rather do that with the same image, and that way I know that if I'm with that one singular. Well, of course, today you have the internet, but if you turn that off and you have the book, you can still always have the conceit of that you're just with that in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have the temptation of easily wandering to another exhibit or something else.
Of course.
So, and also in the museum, you have people having conversations, and I'm distracted by conversations in the background very easily.
I see.
Other people can zero in, you know, like people, some people through sit through a tempest and write poetry or whatever.
Yes, of course. Of course.
I'm one of those people that I get distracted very easily. So when I get into like a dance mode, I can get into my body rhythm and I can tune that. I get into that primal mode. And that's like a really sweet
that
zone
you
for
can
me.
Sustain. That you can.
Yeah, not only is that the sustain, because that sort of might imply that there's a burden there. That's something that's joyful,
right.
And something that really stirs me. I like disconnecting from my head because I can be very cerebral, and I don't like living there.
Smart man.
All the time.
Smart man.
Listen, thank you.
Thank you so much for giving us a call.
Thanks for the show.
You bet. 2127. You too. Take care. 212-757-5555.
So something he might be talking about, which some of you may understand, there's a visual and auditory processing in our system, and some of us are more attuned to listening to things. That listening is easy, as opposed to looking and seeing. You take in things easier, and you know it can be just the opposite for somebody else. I have a hard time at museums. I have a hard time in libraries too. Big, empty, quiet spaces. Something about it's very exhausting for me, but some people are turned on by it.
Jonathan from the Bronx.
Hey, my friend, how you doing?
Very well.
Good.
How are you?
I'm doing excellent.
Let me guess. Your sense of hearing is your dominant sense.
Absolutely right. Yes, but I would like to make a statement, and then I'm going to hopefully get a response that will bless the audience. You said something most recently about considering ethnicity in regards to how sensory is cultivated.
That's right.
Okay, right. So what I would like to point out is that you have certain ethnic populations that are subjected to environmental situations that have impacts upon how they experience sensory perception. And so let me break that down.
Please.
So, for instance, when you come, let's say the South Bronx, the South Bronx leads the nation, unfortunately, in things like asthma, for instance.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
So when you come to areas of the nation where populations are most impacted by things like asthma, obesity, hypertension, hypoglycemia, where you have advertisements for products like Newports and more
potato chips,
and potato chips I'll let go, but I'm saying certain products that you won't find as much. As a matter of fact, certain products that you won't find.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
You know, counties like Dutchess County, even Scarsdale, which has been identified as the most successful county when it comes to New York, when it comes to the educational progressiveness.
Yeah, sure.
My point is this. So I really don't want to, take up too much time.
No,
I want to.
But how, connect this to the senses for me, because, I mean, obviously.
Yes.
Go ahead.
So I'm saying that, for instance, when you have people who are born and raised in poor regions of cities and states where you have high concentrations of everything from chemtrails to pesticides and insecticides and asthma and cigarette smoke and exhaust from automobiles because of where highways and expressways are planned through. And these people wrestle with the highest rates of upper respiratory infections.
Right.
lung infections, cancers, asthma, you know,
it's a
bronchitis,
right?
Sinusitis, things of these natures.
Oh, sure.
And so, and then you incorporate how, on a nutritional and dietetic level, these neighborhoods are saturated with white processed granulated sugar, with starches, with foods that are devitamized and stripped of mineral content. What ends up happening is that you have a biological situation, a physiological situation where people wrestle with excessive amounts of mucus development within their systems because of diet, nutrition, and environment. And these things have a direct correlation in regards to how they physiologically experience sensory.
I agree with you. You're basically saying they're overloaded with noise and visual and environmental pollution, basically.
Yes. Absolutely.
And so their senses get overwhelmed and dulled, and really the renewing factor of the sensations really doesn't happen because they're so overloaded with advertisements and these environmental pollutants.
They don't get a break.
That makes experiencing your senses and getting renewed by your senses very difficult.
Right.
But somehow you've survived it. Somehow you've survived so far, Jonathan. I mean, you're a very alive man.
Well, one, I appreciate that. Two, I agree with you. And three, I have to say that that comes from the ability to appreciate the examples set by my elders and ancestors that have been worthy of imitation, but also to equally, if not more so, learn from and incorporate lessons that have proven to be detrimental to health and wellness. So, for instance, when you have generations upon generations of people that are born and raised on something like soul food, right? Once upon a time, if soul food was used to save a people, it was used as a necessity. And then when you raise a consciousness, for instance, you need to learn that there are real serious critical changes that need to take
place. Sean, we have 30 seconds. I got to have you come down here to the studio and we'll do a show around this idea. What do you think?
Listen, we already talked about that and I'm with you.
Okay.
That's
listen,
great.
I got to
thank you.
All right, we got to run on this call, but thanks so much, Jonathan.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Thank you.
He gives a sociological perspective of the damage that environmental causes can do to people to prevent them from experiencing the renewal that tuning into your senses can do.
Yeah, and a positive mind. You know, if your environment is polluted, it's very hard for you to experience a positive life.
A renewal. We're talking about renewal through the senses. 212-757-5555.
This is why they do these great camps where they take kids out of the city and take them to a farm and take them out to the country so that they get a different sensual experience. So they get an opportunity to feel, you know, the trees and the birds and, get out of the pollution that's around them.
I'm going to say
it's why it's so hard. It's like when I first go camping at night, I miss the sounds of the city.
Yeah.
I think every little sound out in the woods is a bear. I'm not used to that silence.
From the city, they've moved to the suburbs and they can't sleep when they get out to the suburbs.
It's like, wait, I need that noise.
Yeah, the silence is overwhelming.
You have to get used to it. So, the noise pollution, air pollution, visual pollution, it's rough on this, and it causes you to dull your senses. But you can bring them back. Get yourself out to the beach, out to the shore.
It is August, folks. We're throwing it out there that now is the time for expansion. When winter comes, we humans, we naturally contract.
Yeah.
But, August is a good time to really challenge your senses. Try new tastes. Yeah. Have we talked much about taste? Gentleman was talking about citrus and how he can't,
he can't handle it, since he was a kid. Opposite reaction.
If you're just joining us, you are tuned into The Positive Mind here on 99.5 FM WBAI in New York City. I'm Ben Starr here with Kevin O'Donohue, Nassima Diane Deamer as well today. We're taking your calls, talking about the importance of our senses and how understanding and using our senses can help us lead a more positively minded life. Number to call, 212-757-5555. We have Peter on the line. Hi, Peter.
Hello.
Hey, Peter.
Hey, how are you? Did you get Barry White credit?
We got Barry White Love's... What, did we get him what?
He wrote Love's Theme.
Yes, right. That was Barry White, yes.
Okay,
that
right, because he's so famous for his voice.
Of course, but that was...
But he was a producer.
Yes, that too. And then probably made more off that song than any other.
I wouldn't say that.
I don't know. That one got a lot of mileage. What's it called? Love's...
Deeper and Deep, that song.
Love's Theme.
Love's Theme. Anyway, how are you today? What's your reaction to senses?
Let me ask you this question. Have you ever done this riddle about the father and his son are in a car and they get into an accident? The father is killed, son is seriously injured and brought to a hospital. Now, he's on the operating table, and the surgeon walks in and says, "I can't operate on this boy. He's my son."
Oh, and that's his mom.
Yes, you know this riddle. The point of me saying that is because there's this term. It's implicit bias.
Yes,
right.
Yes,
it's a way of saying it. Right. It's like, right. Wait, surgeon, I see a guy in my head.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And you say, because we're talking about senses, but in a way that's like imagination. It's like when I say surgeon, are you seeing a woman? Why not? 80% of entries in college and pre-med are women. We're going to have to change that cliche.
Yes, I totally. Yes. Yeah, all of the bias implicit bias jokes that we have, we're going to have to totally change them. Tell me, so do you use your imagination to enhance sensual experience? I know you have a handicap, right?
You are right. I'm blind.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you must have a fine sense of touch and hearing.
Well, also, I like when I called, there was a tarot card readers on the radio a few years ago, and the woman on the bunny says, "Do you find that you have a heightened sense of," I'm like, "Oh no, don't say something." And she said, heightened psychic sense. And I said, absolutely.
Mm. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Because I'm in a position of, like, the words people are choosing to use, the things they say, they don't say, they walk past me without saying hello. You know, I have to create this whole psychological profile of someone.
I understand. Like, that can be enriching in a way, right? I mean, there's a secret that blind people have about the way they have to go through the world, that you're picking up things, really whole personalities, just by walking past them, right?
You just reminded me, when I was calling my bank, I was speaking to, like, you know, one of the people who answered the question, and she says, "Are you psychic?" I said, "No, but I'm blind." She says, "Just like my uncle."
Uh-huh.
Yes, you're the same way. You can always tell what's going on.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's like that's, they call it the sixth sense, right?
Psychic sense. Oh, okay.
And a lot of people don't use that sense because they have all of their senses. But maybe your psychic sense has been more attuned because you lost one of your senses.
Mm-hmm.
And I have noticed, I really have noticed this change since I lost my vision in 1983 when I was 20 years old, suddenly, from catching a virus. Mm-hmm. Suddenly, that's like a tarot card. That's from a tarot card. There's one of the tarot cards is the guy hanging upside down by one
hanged
foot.
Man. Yeah.
Yes, you can tell me about it because I'm like, yeah, that's me. It's like, you think life looks like this? Try looking at it this way.
Right.
You know? So here I feel like in a way I'm an expert. It's like these things people take for granted. It's like, no.
Yeah.
It might look like this.
Yeah.
The experience may be like this. It's like your experience is flipped around. And I'm telling you, since 1983... the world I entered then was, it was unfamiliar, but I was able to make my way around that world. Now, as of the year 2000, I would say roughly, the world is now unrecognizable.
Wow.
I mean, I mean, it's unrecognizable. I mean,
doesn't
with
match the
computers,
the world you grew up in.
Right, you touched on this.
Okay, Peter, we're going to have to interrupt. We have to take our musical break, but thank you for giving us a call. Again, as usual, you always bring us a surprise.
Thank you.
Give us an updated implicit bias joke the next time.
Yeah, close your eyes so you can see better.
Awesome. Thanks.
Thanks, Peter.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
212-757-5555. We will be back
go ahead.
Shortly after this. Stay tuned.
Bruce Hornsby here on 99.5 FM, WBAI. We heard BAI playing a Tupac sample of that before the show, and we felt like playing it. Something about that. I don't know. I'm a big fan.
Well, you know, the piano jumps out at you, right? But there's other stuff going on behind it. The structure of the song is held together through the bass.
Yeah.
And most people just, like, really hear that sprinkle of harmony and the keyboard, which is fantastic. But, you know, we're talking about developing your senses, enjoying your senses, enlivening your senses. Well, and when you listen to music, if you listen to what's behind the dominant instrument, then you're getting to a deeper level, a deeper enjoyment.
Right, and you can maybe pick out different, you know, sounds and qualities of the music. Yeah. And once you know a song really well, you can start to sort of find your way around it. And that's the same thing like with a piece of art or a scent or, you know, it's like once you sort of know it, you can start to, you know, if you sort of tune into it a little bit more, you'll get more depth out of it, you know, like taking your time, eating. There is a technique with food and dieting where you stop first and really take in the color and the look of your plate, and putting different colors on your plate is really important. It's part of having a healthy diet. And as you look at the colors, and then maybe you bring the food up to your nose and smell it first, and then take your time when you taste it and eat it. If you do that, your level of satisfaction in the food is greater, and you won't eat as much. You will get full faster, no matter what it is you're eating. They say if you take like a bowl of M&Ms and you take one M&M at a time, and you notice the color and you smell the chocolate, and then you eat you'll eat less M&Ms.
Yes. This has been experimented? This
has been proven? It's one way that you can work with not eating too much.
Ben, we have Jill on the line.
Hello, Jill.
Hey, Jill.
Hi.
And she's driving as usual. How are you, Jill?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Tell us.
So two comments. First, I thought perhaps, and I guess depending on our personalities, we'll go either high anxiety, high strung, or we'll go numb. But I feel like society and environments in general are so extreme. There's like a sensory overload just in the atmosphere.
Yeah.
And probably worldwide. And then what is considered a sense or, is it just awareness? Is it your sense of perception? Like, is it just limited to the experience within our bodies? Or is it like, you know, your sense of being alone? Is that a sensory experience?
That's a good question.
You do. You bring up a really good point. I mean, we usually identify the senses as the five senses, but I believe science and culture is starting to use this word sense for more things. There's like the felt sense in psychological stuff. There is there's neuroception, which is like how your nervous system perceives the world around you. There's interoception, which is how you perceive the inside of your body. And these are different layers of sensing that are kind of new. You know, I mean, we have our sensory input, and that's got one layer of the nervous system working. And then how we perceive, you know, it's as we started to dive into this topic, it was like it just mushroomed. I'm like, oh, my God, this is a huge topic. Because it's all so interlinked and intertwined with your history, with traumas, with all this stuff can sort of affect how you see. And I was talking about that song even around the way it is. It's like, that's just the way it is. Well, that's the way it is for me. The way it is for you is totally different. So, you know, we have to appreciate that, you know, how everybody's perceiving themselves or the world is different.
Right. Like, or even the sense of God, if I'm allowed to say that on this radio station.
Yeah.
Sure.
That, you know, that's different for everyone. And even an atheist, I'm sure, has some centralized, you know, understanding of it all.
It really kind of blows your mind when
up this point that there are the five senses that we use to engage with the outer world and that we're receiving information from in the outer world. But then there is what you call interoception. And that we're tuning in, it's almost like a dialogue or a sensation, a touching of this inner self. And that's very, very different than receiving anything from the outside, because the outside can be so overwhelming. You go to this other spot where you're feeling the felt sense, and it's not because of any stimuli outside. Am I getting you, Jill?
Yeah, exactly. And perhaps the appreciation or the leaning toward one or the other, is that what would make us an introvert or an extrovert?
Yes, it would. Yep. That is exactly the thing that will do it.
I'm getting it.
How much you get overloaded. So introverts will, you know, go to solitude in order to rejuvenate and collect themselves, whereas extroverts will go for more sensation, more excitement, and more people.
Right.
Jill, thanks for giving us a call.
Thank you.
All right. Have a good day.
Topic. Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 212-757-5555. We're going to play another tune in 5 minutes, but Nassima, you had an exercise for us to do? Or do you want to take more calls? Do we have the... Okay.
Jack can briefly go through this exercise, and we don't. I don't have to. You know, I was going to lead you on a little bit of a meditation, but what you can do is just go step by step through. You know, as I said before, when you're engaging with food or in any environment, just sort of maybe notice what sense you notice your environments with. Like, there's some people that walk into a room and they immediately smell the room, or they'll
notice the colors without even trying. We know, like, somebody like that.
You just come in and maybe you want to touch something, or, you know, how do you engage your environment? Get to know yourself that way. Like, how do I engage? You know, what's the sense I use most, and how does it make me feel?
If you
really
want to enliven your senses,
and
don't talk for a day.
Don't talk for a day. Slow down. Do sensory deprivation. I've done the sensory deprivation tank. You know,
tell people what that is.
Half an hour where you go in and you float in a warm pool loaded with salt, don't touch the sides, and it's totally dark and totally quiet. And they give you like half an hour in there. And for me, when I did it, it took a long time for me to finally really settle into my body and relax and everything to stop. We're so used to everything moving and being, you know, stimulated all the time that when you go into sensory deprivation, it's just a chance for all of that to relax. And then you can do a little reset on your senses after that. You know, you come out and it's like, ooh, okay, here's the world. A lot of drugs do that. You know, they open your senses.
Or drugs.
Not just drugs, drugs. You know, all the psychedelics and stuff. Give you a little more experience of your senses somehow. There's all these different ways to sort of, you know, maybe counterbalance it. And again, just take slowing down is really important to sensing your world and using your senses. We'll override by going fast. But if you slow down, you can see more, you can hear more, you can, you know, touch more or have more awareness of those things.
You know,
and that can help you open your mind.
We set up our cars for a pleasurable experience, right? We have CDs in our cars and we
climate control,
everything's controlled. And we maximize that environment, right? We use that deliberately. Right. It strikes me with other senses, like we could be doing this in our homes and let's say going to sleep at night. You could have a ritual where you have a way to tamp down your senses or heighten one sense, like lower the lights, but up the music, up the sound of waves or something in order to make sleep come. Or touching something, you know, it could ease your way into sleep.
Yeah, for a lot of people, a good way to sleep is just noticing the pressure and the connection of your body to the bed.
Absolutely.
Is a good, like, just where your body is contacting the bed. That's the touch of your body, and what that does too is it helps to sort of bring a down awareness, like settling down into your body, feeling where you're being, you know, supported by, connected to the bed. I use that a lot with my clients. It's like, where do you feel the touch of the sheets? And just that brings you into the present moment. Your senses will bring you to the present moment.
That's what they'll do.
And that's why I mentioned before, Tantra uses the senses to do that as a meditation. You can use your senses as a way to meditate. 212-757-5555 is the number. And we can take a couple more calls, I guess.
Yeah, let's take a couple more calls. But, yeah, I'm stuck on this thing about tamping down the senses as you go to bed at night.
Yeah. slowly taking them away, you know, like slowing it down.
It strikes me smell is not a good thing to conducive to sleep.
No.
Although they say lavender is this big thing.
Rose. It does. It has association.
Okay, so
it does things to the body.
Smells.
Smells.
But not bacon.
Not bacon.
Or coffee.
Because those are food smells. Those things you eat. It's about waking up and eating.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So you want something to ease your mind, slow down. Aromatherapy has huge effects. There's a lot that can be talked about that.
There is a thing called aromatherapy.
Aromatherapy. It is because, again, smell hits the emotional center before it gets filed away as an experience.
So if somebody's going for an aromatherapy session, they can expect to feel certain emotions?
Yeah.
Aromatherapy will actually conjure certain emotions that can be used in the therapy? Is that what aromatherapy does?
Usually aromatherapy is about balancing emotions.
Okay.
So if you're very anxious or fearful, you can use something that's like grounding or
like
woody.
Pine.
Yeah, pine, the woody scents or those kinds of things. It's to sort of balance emotions.
Does the therapist ask you, like, what emotions are troubling you, and then they'll give you an aroma?
Some aromatherapists, I mean, we don't have to go into too much detail, but some aromatherapists can also heal different diseases with, I mean, there's just so much in aromatherapy.
212-757-5555. We have about 7 minutes more calls. If you don't think that sensation matters, we are a sense-deprived country. We are not visually deprived, but we are what deprived?
Probably touch deprived more than anything. In most households, it was, you know, especially I'm going to make a generalization in sort of white America.
Okay. Careful.
Because I know, it's like touch isn't culturally, you know,
acceptable.
The British,
yes,
the,
that's
you know,
why
that influence.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's not like in our wheelhouse so much, or a little more square in that sense. And touch is seriously deprived, or touch is given in a way that was traumatic on some level.
Yeah.
And so touch is, if you do not have your sense of touch, you could die. If you aren't touched as a child, you will die.
Yes, you will.
And that's just proven. And if you are, if you do not have the capacity to feel touch and injury, then you could die. And there are some people that are born with that that, you know, handicap where they're not able to feel like touch. Like they don't feel their bodies, they don't feel their skin. Their skin has no sense to it. So they are at risk of dying because they can have infections and things that they won't feel. They won't feel pain. They don't feel pain.
And touch supports the immune system. Right? It
buttresses
the immune system.
Yeah,
so especially if you're young
system.
And you're not getting that touch.
Yeah.
Your immune system is not going to be as vigorous.
No, it's not.
And they've done studies like couples on dates throughout the world and, you know, the amount of touching that the people will do. And we always come out on the low end of that.
I know
and
those
France
numbers.
France comes out.
Yeah.
On, you know the numbers?
I know the numbers. Puerto Rico is like 181 times in 1 hour the couple touched. France was like 80. The UK, the US was like 2, and the UK, Britain, 0 touches.
Wow.
So
what is that saying about the value of touch to the culture?
It's a cultural thing,
right?
You know? I know Hispanic, Latino, they're much more touching. They're much more engaged physically. I think also in Black culture, there's much more enlivening in the body and touching and, you know, the movement of the body is much more allowed. But, you know, the white culture tends to be very restricted with their sexuality and their sensuality and, you know, restrictive somehow.
Yeah.
And it's sad. I mean, I think everybody needs a hug, you know, needs to feel a touch on the shoulders. Like we said, when there's touch involved in any sort of verbal or visual stimulation or learning, you just take it in more. You take it in.
Yes, you do.
It's easier to learn and hear when you're being touched in some way.
It's so therapeutic.
So
enriching to the experience.
Yeah.
There's so much more to say about sensation, but imagine if our success in life was measured by how much we engage our senses. So many people think, oh, I'll make more money if I shut down my senses and I just focus on making money. or doing my job or doing this, then I'll get there. I'll get to a place where I will be free and happy. Whereas imagine if you can be happy right now. You
yeah,
can
absolutely.
Take a piece of chocolate and watch it, you
yeah.
know,
or like our
reduce
first caller.
In your mouth.
Our first caller has a
Lisa.
Wonderful, beautiful input
yes.
before she goes to work. Mm. So listen to beautiful music on your way to work. Look for a beautiful face to look at, or bring an aroma that you like with you on the subway. If you don't like the smell of the subway, bring some peppermint or some lavender to take a whiff of.
Pine.
It will change, or pine, whatever yeah. you whatever
I
you
do
like.
I do like the smell of the average subway station. Is that weird?
Oh, yeah, a bit.
I don't know.
Were you down there today?
Well, you notice there's a difference.
They took the garbage bells out.
This is interesting. Out. There's a difference between the smell of the subway and the path.
I believe
distinctly
it. I don't know. I never,
different
I've never
smell.
Taken the path. I don't even.
It's so interesting. Yeah. I'm like, yeah. why does it smell different? It's like, yeah.
Well, you were mentioning like when you leave the city and then you come back.
Sure, yeah. I mean, when you yeah. go anywhere, if you come back through JFK,
uh-huh.
as soon as you set foot out the airport doors onto the. That little driveway concourse thing.
Yes, right.
The smell that, you know, the smell of that filthy air.
I'm home.
Right? It's home.
Yeah.
And it, and then you could smell it. It smells yeah. dirty, but
and
it smells
smell
like home.
And you smell the ocean there, too, by JFK.
Yeah,
there's
sure.
a little mix of that.
Right.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, Jamaica Bay, all the brackish
yeah.
water and
yeah.
probably bodies that are rotting in there.
Everybody but, knows their smell of home.
Yeah.
And like walking into your grandma's house. I remember you saying that.
That's
walking into
one.
Grandma's house had a very specific smell. Maybe it's the mothballs
yeah.
or something. I don't know.
Do you know the sound of your back door closing
mm.
in your house, childhood home?
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a stairway
Can
where the top
that?
Of the steps, there was a wooden, I guess, floorboard by the top of the steps that anytime anyone stepped on it, it just made the loudest creaking noise,
right.
you know?
But is that sort of comforting in a way?
Yeah.
You know,
right?
and I just want to draw that, like, the children are so sensorily attuned that I think that's why our childhood memories can be so connected to our senses. Like the teacher does with his students. It's like, okay, you have a memory of something. What were the – and they could all probably very easily come up with a sensory experience of that memory because we are so sensorily attuned when our kids are so present in their senses. That's like really what they're working off. They mm. don't have mm-hmm. that much other input. As you grow, it becomes more and more tamped down. But, wow, I mean, we can remember those memories of our childhood in such a sensory way. I think that's why it takes you right back and
crayons.
Brings you to the moment.
Crayons,
the smell of crayons, the
right.
look, the feel
and
of crayons.
And then sort of we get to middle school.
The taste
and
of crayons. Well, yeah, that's what Ben was eating, crayons. Which one tasted better, the
that's
blue
you thought it was a
or the orange? Did they have a different taste? The green? Did it
right.
taste like lime?
The Crayola brick red color.
That was the best.
Brick red was
He thought it was a bazooka bubble gum.
My favorite Crayola was brick red.
Right.
Something really nice about that.
Right.
Brick red. Not
right.
the red. Brick red.
I got you.
Yeah.
And there's also the feeling like all those tastes and smells from childhood, like people that go back to have their old candies. It brings you back to the time.
Oh,
makes
yeah.
you feel young again.
Oh, yeah.
It can make you feel young
yep.
again.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cup. Something about it.
Yeah.
You just never get old.
Mm. Yeah. Or a marathon
right
bar.
It's a beautiful thing. Well, I want to thank everyone for tuning in today. We've been listening to The Positive Mind here on 99.5 FM, WBAI.
Hoping that we brought some ideas, concepts.
And guests.
To bring a more,
as
we more positively
like
modern
to
life.
Try to
concepts.
Do. Today was all about senses. And if you missed today's show or any show, you can catch us on replay on iTunes Store. It's a free podcast. Just go on iTunes and look us up, The Positive Mind. Thank you so much to Alex, our call screener, for helping us out.
Thank you, Alex. We know it was busy in there.
Again, if you want to reach Kevin, you can get in touch with him, kevin@thepositivemind.com. And you can follow us on iTunes. Again, it's a free podcast, so we post all our stuff up there. If you ever miss a show, go on the iTunes Store. It's free. You don't have to pay for it. Just download it for free on your phone, on your computer.
Yes.
Subscribe, and you'll get all
the
updates.
It's a nice, long podcast.
It is. So thanks again. And we're here every Wednesday from 3 to 5 p.m. A reminder, go to WBAI.org and become a BAI buddy today. Help us out. We are listener-sponsored community radio. So go to WBAI.org, click on Ways to Donate, and become a BAI buddy in the name of The Positive Mind. Thanks again for tuning in. I'm Ben Starr, here with Kevin O'Donohue and Asima Diane Deemer. This has been The Positive Mind. Take care.